Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
With more than 40 years of performing, with and without a band behind him, Billy Claiborne has some stories to tell. With his country roots and the attitude that he's really no different than the folks who come to see him, he formulates a mixture of folk, rock, and pop songs that everyone can relate to in a meaningful way. Billy Claiborne, welcome to Song Creating.
Great to be here, Steve.
It's great to have you. Now, you and I have crossed paths a couple of times, and the last time was when you rode your motorcycle to one of the open mics I was hosting and carted your Martin in a backpack.
That's right.
And it wasn't just down the road. I don't know how many miles you... I thought that was pretty impressive skills.
Roll, you know? Yeah, I attached it to the sissy bar and ride up in a motorcycle. I just thought the vision was perfect.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that many people saw you, but at least at the open mic as you pulled up. But I'm sure down the highway, somebody went, there goes a real troubadour. But you are a troubadour. You've been traveling all over. And did you get your start in New England here?
Oh, yeah. I'm from Maine originally. And when I was in high school and college, we played all over the state of Maine, mostly in bands. Although I played with my brother. I have a twin brother. So we played together quite a bit. We had a band called the Bailey Brothers Band for a while. It had some modest levels of success throughout the New England. And then I don't know, about a dozen years ago or so, I decided maybe I'll just go without a band for a while. But now I'm actually thinking maybe of getting back into a band.
So is Bailey your real name?
Yeah.
So Billy Claiborne's a stage name.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my gosh.
You're ever the first person to know that.
Well, when you said Bailey, I just started thinking, well, okay, so you, the Bailey brothers, why would you come up with another name at that point?
That's right.
Because, I mean, so is Billy your first name?
Nope.
Oh, my gosh. Do you want me to edit all this out so nobody knows?
You've got a scoop here. When I decided to go out on my own, I picked up a stage name and just use it, and it's stuck. And there are places I go now, like I've gone into some bars around here, not when I'm playing, just to visit or have a dinner, and people just start calling me Billy, and I go, oh yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's funny. I had no idea, because I was thinking Billy Claiborne is just a great name, but
it is.
If you Google Billy Claiborne, some other Billy Claiborne comes up. He's like an old, I don't know if he's if he's still wanted out west,
no,
from a 100-year-old warrant. Or
he was in the Ike Clanton gang he was at the gunfight at the OK Corral, and I think he ran. And then when the real Billy the Kid died, he insisted that people call him Billy the Kid. And when somebody didn't one night, refused to call him Billy the Kid, he got into a gunfight with him and was killed. He was like 21.
No, wait, did you know this when you picked the name?
I think so. I think I'm a fan of the old West, you know, and I just thought, so I picked it. He's a notorious gunslinger in the old West.
That's great. Yeah. I think you may be the first one, at least that I know of, who's playing under a different stage name or a pseudonym, as is called.
Well, this is the first time I've ever talked about it. I just show up as Billy Claiborne. Nobody says me.
You know, why would we doubt you? You have such an honest face.
That's right.
And I guess we could throw that word honest out there. You are an honest singer too. I mean, you do when you play. There's a certain amount of genuineness to, is that genuineness?
Genuity? I don't know.
Genuity? Yeah, there's a genuine appeal that you have.
I appreciate that.
You do feel like, it does sound like you're singing from the heart, and you're singing stories that you lived yourself.
Yeah, the songs I do of my own are definitely, and then I choose covers that I think I mostly relate to. I mean, I know a lot of the bars, they want popular songs and so forth, but I tend to pick songs that has real meaning to me, but that I can relate with.
You know, it's surprising sometimes how You can play a song that you don't necessarily think is going to be a real winner, and somebody will just go, "That's the song I needed to hear."
Yeah, and, it's true.
Yeah. So let's go back. Tell me, growing up in Maine, did you ever play at Benson's, the biker bar outside of Portland?
No. We were in central Maine, a little mill town called Livermore Falls. And once we got to college, we used to play like on Thursday nights, we'd play the frat parties. And then Friday nights, we'd play the local high schools. And Saturday nights, we'd either just go off on our own or play together in the bars around Bangor and Orno and Old Town. And we went north as far north as Presque Isle and Holton, and all those places in between.
Wow.
Those were great days, because sometimes we would introduce ourselves as somebody else, because this is the days before the internet, you know. And I remember my brother and I we said we were J.J. Cale once. He had a hit on the radio, Cocaine. And so we just said, J.J. Cale's playing here tonight. Nobody had a picture of him or anything, so we did a pretty good.
Nobody demanded their 50 cents back?
No, there's probably people in Maine saying, "I remember when I saw J.J. Cale up in Bucksport."
That's brilliant. Oh, we could do so much before the internet.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Maine is a, there's a lot of open land up there. You must have put a lot of miles on that car getting one place
when
to
you
the
get,
next.
When you get above Bangor, I mean, they don't even have names of the towns. It's like provinces or something, plantations or something. It's huge. It's huge, yeah. The farthest we went was Presque Isle, which is about as far north as you can go in Maine. And, yeah, we had a van with very little heat. I remember we were playing in the winter. And, we put a lot of miles on it.
I think Presque Isle is where Ellis Paul grew up.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's gotten out of there.
Yeah.
Let's see. You have classic high school upbringing, kids running around, getting in trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a very small town, and most people, you know, they either set their sights on working in the mill or joining the military, and somehow I took a different course.
So when you're in a town that small before the internet, I guess if we can look back, and so there's some people listening to this podcast probably do not recall anything before the internet, but I guess you had TV, of course, and you had the radio. Was that your exposure to music outside of Maine?
No, actually, my father had a furniture and appliance store. And then he expanded into a record store, a music store. So we had all the top 40 singles come in right on time. And I just remember, you know, I would take one or two home with me. I'd bring them back, but I'd take them home and play there in the store. So, I mean, I remember, you know, when the Beatles first broke, opening the box when the album had just come in and so forth. My father didn't really play. He played a little guitar, but my parents loved music, and they always had records on. They weren't the kind of music that I glommed onto, but they were like Burt Camford and Andy Williams, but they played Ray Charles a lot and things like that. So I was exposed to a lot, quite a broad spectrum of music.
I'm always impressed by the talent that comes out of some of these small towns.
Yeah.
And did you have anybody famous come out of, what was it, Liverpool Falls?
Livermore. Livermore. No, I don't think so. I may be the most famous one. And that ain't saying much.
When did you start playing guitar?
I started playing probably when I was about 14 or 15, I guess.
That's your primary instrument. I know you play a lot of instruments, but that's your primary one, right?
Yeah, for sure. Acoustic. I've got way too many. Way too many of them.
So did you learn the classic way with a music teacher and a guitar teacher?
You know, I didn't. My brother and I just kind of taught ourselves. We did, for a brief period, we went to this guy in town who gave lessons. He was more of a banjo player, but he tried to get us on a cruise ship. He thought we would be an act like the Hager brothers. Remember the Hager brothers on the Hee Haw? you know, it was like, they were twins, you know, and we hated them. And it was like, you guys could be the next Hager brothers. And we're like, we don't want to be the Hager brothers. So we didn't stay with him very long, but.
He was trying to get one of you to play the banjo and the other to play the guitar.
Yeah, something like that, you know, and then do Swanee River, and you know, we were like, no, we're not going to do that.
You know, when I learned to play guitar back, oh God, I think it was 1969, and my guitar teacher taught me everything, you know, on manuscript. There's no tablature. We had chord charts when I finally got into chords. But I'm learning to play, you know, I'm looking at that B note, you know, as the middle line of a five, you know, guitar players don't learn that way anymore.
No.
And no. Nor do they actually learn that much with lessons, because they just pick it all up on YouTube. It's a whole different way of learning, which actually is an ancient way of learning. I learned from a historian friend of mine that back in the Greek days, they used to teach lute to people with tablature. So it's not a new cheating method.
And I'm still learning. There's so much opportunity on the internet. I've decided, you know, I've got to improve my finger picking and maybe then ad-libbing and so forth. So I found a guy who teaches, you know, on Zoom just like this. So I check in with him once a week and we go over things. So I'm still at my ancient age here. I'm still learning. It's good.
Good for you.
Yeah.
What do you find? This is kind of in lead improvisation that you're working on.
Yeah, because I'm strictly a strummer. I just want to do a little more lead work and ad libbing and adding. You know, so he's helping a great deal. But you can find these people, and then you can find all the chord charts, and you can name a song and you can find the chords for it. how to play it.
It's not always right on the internet.
That's right.
That's one thing I found. In fact, you could find three or four of them, and they're all different. So you got to kind of figure out, well, one's right, one's wrong, and one's right in one part and wrong in another. And the other ones, you kind of combine them and figure out what sounds good.
Here we go. Patty Griffin's from Maine.
Oh, she is.
Yeah. And Julianna Hatfield. This from Maine, and I know there's some more. Clarence White.
I'm sure there's plenty. If you include Portland and everywhere else, which is a great music scene there. Yeah. But that's Southern Maine, I suppose. I don't know if they call that true Maine.
What? Patty's from Old Town, which is right outside of Bangor, which is really in a Native American reservation mostly. But we used to play there. In fact, I remember I got a job playing at Old Town once in a like Knights of Columbus or one of those places, and I said, well, okay, we'll play here, but I don't want to die here. I don't want to play here forever. Ended up playing there for like 2 years.
So what was the music the Bailey brothers were playing?
We were mostly a cover band, what was popular at the time.
Which is 60s, 70s?
Yeah, 70s. Early 70s, late 60s kind of stuff. Remember we did a lot of Doobie Brothers and those kind of songs. But I remember one time we were in that bar in Old Town, and we did Knocking on Heaven's Door by Bob Dylan. And during a break, the bartender came over and he says, you know that song, Knocking on Heaven's Door? I said, yeah. I said, don't do that song anymore. And I said, why? He said, take a look at the bar. And I looked at the bar, and then, you know, these elderly old men sipping their beers at the bar. He said, don't sing that song in here. Said, oh yeah, okay.
Who did that song? If you want to get to heaven, Mitty Gritty Dirt Band. I can't remember who.
That's right. That's what I wanted.
Well, there's a lot of songs written about that topic, anyway. Oh man. All right, so. I love getting the full story here. So when you went single, how long ago?
About 10 or 12 years ago, I guess.
And oh, wow. So you were with the band for quite some time then.
Yeah. Well, and then I was with another band called the Subheads for a while. We played a lot of places. And that's when, you know, Dennis, my brother, went his own way and I went my way. But I joined bands and he had bands. He was in a band called the Van Gogh's.
Yeah. Van Gogh's, great name.
Yeah, Van Gogh's, they were pretty good.
When did you come down to Boston?
In 81, I think. Yeah, 81 I came down.
Oh, good time to be in town here for musically.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you said, it seems like I remember seeing a lot of young acts that later became big, you know. So,
yeah. Well, there were a lot at the time. Yeah. Not so much anymore.
And comedians, too. There were a lot of comedians here that ended up becoming big stars. Like Stephen Wright and people like that used to play little bars around here.
Huh. So is that what you did then? You just toured around Boston area, New England?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, I just do the bar scene, you know, open mics and bar scenes. And I played a lot of places. I had a regular gig in Newton I forget the name of the street now, but there was a bar that's going out of business now. But I used to play there every week, every Saturday night for almost 2 years, I think.
Wow. Wow. Nobody, everybody came in. Did you have a new crowd coming in every night, or was it the same crowd?
I think it was mostly new. I don't remember that there were a lot of regulars, but it was a good crowd. And then I used to play this pizza place over in Newton, too. I used to play there on Saturday nights for a long time. So it was always playing a bar. I've been on kind of a hiatus lately, but I'm probably going to get back to it soon.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. We first met when you, I was looking for somebody to fill in for me at a gig, and you popped up and we talked, and I think you said you might have posted on Facebook after that you played 3 hours straight, no break, and no notes. I think did you play? You didn't even have to look at an iPad or a chart.
I probably did have an iPad, but
okay,
yeah, I did do. You know, I did 3 hours straight without a break, and when I got done, I went to the manager. You know, I said, hey, you know, I played 3 hours straight without a break. He went,
He was just. And he says, I've been tending bar 3 hours straight without a break. What do you want?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He says, I'm not going to pay you anymore. You know?
Well, you don't want to take a break because that's when people up and leave. And,
that's right.
Yeah. So, right. Keep in their seats as long as you can. Hopefully the tips come in. But boy, if I recall, that place wasn't a high tipping bar.
No.
But that may be more me than the bar. Who knows?
Yeah, I never know what to do with tips, if it's cheesy to put a tip thing out or not. But sometimes I don't have a tip jar and people come up and say, where's your tip jar? I'll give you the tip.
Yeah,
jar.
Right. I've since put the Venmo out. And amazingly, I think every Venmo tip I've gotten so far has been, I think, $20. Which not many people put a 20 in a tip
That's
bucket
right.
unless they're feeling a little flush. But
That's right.
To do that on Venmo, it's like, that's the thing about it. They don't really feel it. It's not actual cash leaving their fingers.
Do you put a sign up somewhere in your Venmo?
Yeah, I just got a little thing. I got my little Venmo scan bar, and printed
it. Nice.
And it's definitely because people aren't carrying cash that much.
That's a good idea.
There you go. Yeah, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
You may be the only one that's heard it here first. I have definitely seen it a lot, but it does work.
That's great.
So did you have a side gig going, like a day job?
Oh, yeah. I'm a writer. That's all I
do. What
do
you write?
Well, I was a reporter for a lot of years at the Boston Globe, and now I'm a freelance writer. I write for a lot of publications. So I'm just strictly writing now.
Do you find some crossover with your songwriting?
I think I was attracted to journalism as a form of self-expression. And there is definitely a crossover. I mean, I think you can almost write journalism and it becomes a song or vice versa. I think I always wanted to find an outlet to express myself. And for some reason, I always played music, but I never thought about writing music, writing my songs, till much later. And so I was attracted to journalism. And so I was always a writer and a reporter, a storyteller. So it's always, there is a definite connection.
There is a depth, you know, it's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. And just the things that you see, that you witness. I don't know, were you a reporter that actually goes to the scene? What do you call that? There's a...
Like a beat reporter?
Reporter.
Yeah. Well, my first jobs in journalism were in Maine. And, you know, there you just had the police scanner on all the time. You just followed the police wherever they went. You went to murder scenes and at car accidents and things like that. When I got to Boston, I was covering more business, so I became a business reporter.
But, there's more songs that would come out of murder scenes
exactly
than a business meeting.
Exactly, real lot more.
Did it ever happen? Did anything on your beat inspire a song?
Some of my, not that, but I think there have been instances where I hear a phrase or somebody says something that ends up becoming a song. I've got one on my latest album called, the album is called Storm Doors, which is really an amalgam of two songs I was trying to write. But I went to visit my brother up in Maine, who had just broken up with his wife, and they had built a brand new house. And then they broke up. And then I knocked on the door, and he opened the door and he said, "Welcome to the home we never had." And I'm sure that's a country western line somewhere. But
yes, that's great.
But I took it and put it into a song. So I decided not to name the song "The Home We Never Had." It's called "Storm Doors," but it's about that's what it is. You know, it's like, this is the home we never had.
Well, it sounds like the term storm may have a couple different meanings.
That's right.
Stormy relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, man. Welcome to the home we never have. Hold on. Writing that down. Yeah, you may not use it for your title, but I just might.
I think I'll bet there's a country song of that title. I never looked it up, but I bet there is.
But the problem with being a reporter is you've got to be honest about things. You can't embellish. Well, maybe, okay, I don't know, maybe you can embellish a little bit, but you gotta continue to be factual. Whereas as a songwriter, you can kind of,
That's right.
And it seems like you'd want to do that as you're writing a story. Go, can't we just say that
that's right,
this happened afterwards and you know, make it so much more interesting?
Well, there are ways to tell a story, I think. You have to stay with the facts for sure. But I think there's always a tendency to want it to be more than it is sometimes. But
yeah,
so that brings you into the songwriting or storytelling or novel writing. I've got a novel in my desk here somewhere that I'm working on too. But
so you're just born to write.
I guess so.
Yeah. When you were reporting on business, was there any aspect of that, whether it be, the first thing I think of if you're reporting on business is probably some greed aspect of it.
That's right.
Did any of that ever inspire anything or?
I think it's all there somewhere. It'll probably, if it hasn't come out, it will. But because you carry these things around, you know, once you go through these experiences and you work with people and you cover these issues, my beat was banking, and it was during the banking crisis where all the banks were failing and there were people going to jail for all kinds of, misappropriation of funds and lending violations and so forth. So I haven't written anything, I don't think, but directly related to it. I think probably you do carry those things around and it comes out in your language maybe, or just some of the things you say or feel.
Yeah. I think the word I'm thinking of is humanity. You're just exposed to so much of it in so many different ways. And that is what a lot of good, effective songs have really, that's the focus of a lot of great songs. It's just the humanity.
Gonna sit right here and get to the heart of the matter. We're gonna take our time and get what we're both getting after. We're gonna talk away all of our blues. I'm gonna put on all of my moves, and we'll feel better once we get to the heart of the matter. Well, I spend my days fixing other people's disasters. Waste my time wishing I was somebody else. Every time I try to get one foot in front of the other, takes me farther and farther away from the heart of matter. Well, those walls, wires, telephones, and TVs spoil our day. Gonna junk all that stuff and everything that's in our way. I've been hiding from the sunlight, dancing in the dark without you. I've been burning my candles at both ends and howling at the moon. But I'm ready to change, I'm ready for the happy ever after. So why don't we sit right here and get to the heart of the matter? I've been burning my candles at both ends and howling at the moon. But I'm ready to change, I'm ready for that happy ever after. So why don't we sit right here and get to the heart of the matter? I'm gonna stay right here till we get to the heart of the matter. We'll be right back.
We're back with Billy Claiborne from the Boston area. So, Billy, we're talking about your reporting skills and your brushes with all kinds of humanity, good and bad. And is this leading into characters in your novel that you're coming up with too?
Are they? Well, definitely. It's easier. I find it easier to bring life experiences into a novel, and that's where you can embellish, like you were talking about. You can embellish it a lot, but yeah, there's a lot of life experiences in the novel, a lot of childhood memories too, which I seem to be plagued with from time to time.
Can't get them out of your head, huh?
No.
All this time. So when you're, the songs that you write, do they tend to focus on people or a person?
I think so. They're probably mostly personal. I think it's hard. I mean, I've written a lot of songs from other points of view. You know, I don't sit down and try to write a song like, I'm going to write a song today about violence in schools. You know, you can't do that. But there was one time there was a school shooting that it was just another case where somebody shot up a school and killed some kids. And that was on my mind and I was thinking of it. So I ended up writing it from the point of view of the shooter, which isn't really a new tactic. I mean, Randy Newman writes from the point of view of a fictional character a lot, and Springsteen even did it in Nebraska and so forth. So it's not a new idea, but I found that that was a way to convey some thoughts that otherwise you wouldn't. I remember I played it the first time I played it for, it's called One Way. It's also on my latest album. And I played it with my wife the first time. She went, is something wrong? Do we need to talk?
That is a heavy, I mean, not only is that a heavy subject matter, but coming at it from that perspective is,
I've never played it live.
I was just going to say, it's not like a barroom tune that you may want.
No, I've never played it live. It's never come up live.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of songs that are great songs that just don't quite work in the bar, but that one does seem pretty heavy. And what's the name of it again?
It's called One Way. It's like, it's just a kid who, you know, which I think is like a lot of kids that they see people become famous for becoming famous they're famous for being famous. And they feel like there's got to be some way I can become famous. And they end up, you know, resorting to something like that, or violence and so forth. Just disconnected from reality, or they just nowhere else to go. There's only one way for me to make it in this world.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, let's move on to something that's a little bit
brighter.
Brighter. The song we're going to talk about today is The Heart of the Matter.
Right.
And I think there's no denying the Springsteen-esque feel and sound of this song. Part of that, I think, has to do with your voice. There's just, you know, which is just you. You know, I don't think you're trying to sound like him. You just do.
Yeah, I get that quite a bit. And this particular song, I think I had Tunnel of Love instrumentation in mind, and it does sound like that from that album. And sometimes I feel like, oh, gee, I'm not ripping him off. I'm inspired by it, you know? So I don't mind the comparison.
Yeah. I mean, you're honoring him with,
with
something.
It was definitely an influence. So I can't get away from it.
Yeah. I used to call these groups of these songwriters and performers, I think I called them hometown rockers. They had it was a category, and it was Springsteen, Johnny Cougar, or Mellencamp, Brian Adams, and Tom Petty,
Beaver Brown.
yeah. Well, he was kind of a one-hit wonder, definitely Danforth Coley, right? Yeah,
that's right.
There's something about that, and it's not country, it's not Southern rock,
right?
And I don't know if there was a name for that style.
Yeah.
If there was, I came up with my own because I really wasn't sure. It was kind of about their hometown.
It's a rural, not dedicated to a certain area of the country, but just a rural kind of existence, I guess.
Yeah. I think if we were to call it rural rock, we'd have a lot of problems. It doesn't roll off the tongue. But this kind of fits into this. So this was inspired by what?
You know, I think there's like three or four ways to write a song. And one of them is they just come to you in a flash, and that doesn't happen nearly enough. You know, like McCartney said, he dreamt the melody to Yesterday. I mean, how come I don't have dreams like that? You know, but this was one that did come in a flash, but it was totally accidental. I wasn't thinking about writing a song. I was just writing it. I carry a notebook around and I jot things down in a journal and so forth. So I was having therapy. I was waiting. I had an appointment with my therapist, and I was just waiting for her. And I was just thinking about, what are we going to talk about today? What subject are we going to, you know, take apart today? And I was thinking how that therapy is a lot like confession. And that led me to remember a childhood memory. Well, not childhood, but, you know, from my hometown. I grew up in a small mill town that was predominantly French-Canadian and Roman Catholic. I wasn't, but all my friends were Roman Catholic and French-Canadian. And I used to go with them on Saturdays. They'd go to catechism class and then they'd go to confession. I wouldn't go. I'd just wait for them outside. But on the way to church, they would talk about what they were going to confess. And they would make up stories that they were going to confess. Like one guy would say, I'm going to say I swore at my mother. I said, no, you used that last week. Oh, yeah, right. Well, I'm going to say I pinched my sister. And I'm going to say I didn't do my homework. And I'd be like, guys, we stole beer out of the corner store and took girls up into the woods and skipped school. Why aren't you going to confess that? And they were like, you crazy. You don't confess real things. They know my parents. The priest knows my parents. They're not going to. And I just thought, what kind of irony is this? Isn't that a sin? Now you're going to have to confess that you lied. You know, I don't think I was sophisticated enough to come up with that at the time, but I've often thought about it. And then I was thinking, and I was sitting there in the therapist's office, and I was thinking that, you know, maybe you don't always come to full terms and you don't really confess what the issues are. So, you know, so I probably wrote, okay, this time we're going to sit here and we're going to get to the heart of the matter. I had forgotten that there was an Eagles song called Heart of the Matter, but, and you know, I'm going to be on my best behavior and we're going to talk away our blues. And, you know, it seems like there's a lot of distractions in the world that keep us from getting to the heart of the matter. And this time we're going to really do it. And I totally forgot about it. I wrote, you know, probably two pages, closed it. And then weeks later, I was just going through the notebook and there it was, almost the entire song, as it's written now. You know, I hardly had to make any changes. I just came home and went in the studio and came up with it. I did it. All the lyrics are right there. You know, I wish that kind of thing happened more often. But I think when you're not thinking about things, you can automatically come to mind sometimes, that's come off the pen. You know, a lot of writing books and a lot of writing coaches will say, just write, just get up in the morning and write. And that's how you write songs. But I've never had the discipline to kind of do that. Maybe I should. Hemingway, they asked Hemingway once, does he wait for inspiration or does he, you know, sit down and go to work? And he says, no, I wait for inspiration every morning at 9 o'clock.
I saw a quote the other day. It says somebody said, every time I sit down to write a new song, yard work looks a lot more appealing.
Yeah. Well, it is slogging. I mean, it can be slogging if you dedicate hours or certain minutes of the day. Like, I'm going to do this. It can feel slogging.
I know they do. It is. They do say it's like a muscle. You know, you have to keep exercising it. But you're writing, I mean, at least in your career, you were at least writing all the time. You know, your work was literal and, or literary or however you phrase it. And, I think that, you know, you were exercising it probably without necessarily realizing it, because you're coming up with adjectives and adverbs and right. you know all constantly, and having to come up with a new way of saying something
that's right.
So
and I find with songwriting, I think the way that works for me best is just noodle around with the piano or the guitar and say nonsense lyrics, and then something will come out. And I usually have a tape recorder usually there just taping what I do. And then I just forget about it and go back to it. And, hey, wait, there's something there. I can do something with that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. How many times have you played something and not recorded it, and then a half hour later, what was that?
I've got a million gold records
yeah.
in my dreams.
Yeah. I know. No kidding. You've got to record it. Oh, yeah. My gosh. So I like this, your second verse there. Spend my days fixing other people's disasters. Now, were you kind of the, at times were you, did you act as like the priest to your friends confessing the real crimes, the real thing?
No, I think when I came around to that, I was thinking of, crisis consultants but everything from plumbers to, you know, people that come to your house, like, I'll fix your disaster, but nobody's going to fix mine. You know, that kind of, I'm good at fixing other people's disaster, but I can't help myself kind of thing. Because this is all in retrospect. A lot of it's in retrospect. You know, it's like, I wasn't thinking anything like that when I wrote it, but looking back on it now, the whole thing is about how we don't reveal ourselves, and how I think it's a normal reaction not to completely reveal yourself to everyone. And that's what the song is really about. And now this time, I'm going to do it. I'm going to reveal myself.
I like what happens is you come to a more positive close at the end of the last verse, and you bring somebody into this now. So
it may be the most optimistic song I've ever written. A lot of my songs kind of dwell on. I remember I was asked to play like a farm, a farm outing a couple of years ago. And I get there and I set up, and there's a lot of little kids around, and I was looking at my set list, and I've got all these songs about heartbreak and murder all this. And I said to the guy who was running it, I said, you know, a lot of my songs, they're kind of, I don't know, they're not really made for kids. He's like, just sing them. They're fine. You know, but I guess I tend to write more about like heartache and loss and things like that. But this one is, I think, one of the most optimistic ones. That's why I ended the record with it, CD with it.
You know, it's interesting as I read these lyrics. You use the term "we" as a pronoun a lot. So I know you're not singing about yourself solely in this. Although I'm not sure if we as you and a specific person or you and just
right.
just humanity. And you do use the word "you" in the bridge just as "you know." So it's not really, it's kind of not so much a "you" with meaning. But then in the last verse, I've been hiding from the sunlight, dancing in the dark without you. All of a sudden, as I hear that and as I read that, all of a sudden there's now somebody you're singing to here.
Yes.
And I think that's where this, you know, you're solving, you're getting to the heart of the matter with somebody, solving the problem, right. whatever it might be, you know, marital difficulties or whatever it is. And that's the optimism now that you've actually brought that person into it. And it really takes on a different, if you had just said, I've been hiding from the sunlight and dancing in the dark, I've been burning my candles, you know, all of a sudden you don't have that.
Right.
And then
I say, I'm ready for the happy ever after, you know, this like, it's sort of a statement like, now I'm ready to put all this other stuff aside and I'm ready for the happy ever after.
Yeah.
Which is, we're all supposed to have, I guess.
Oh, well, it'd be nice if we did. So in the course of the song, the creation of this, obviously, as you said, lyrics were there for you. And then you added chords to that, which is not the way you normally write. You kind of write kind of in combination, which is pretty common. Did you try some different approaches to this, or did you have a pretty good sense of what you wanted to?
There weren't a lot with this one, but I think I do have some tapes of different versions of it, a completely acoustic version, or I think I always more or less kept it this kind of pace or this kind of beat, but I tried to get, I have another one where I have a louder, it's not a steel guitar, but it's kind of a louder electric guitar in the back. You know, different mixes.
Yeah, but your pattern has always been the same, where the emphasis on the syllables.
I think I kind of let the syntax create the beat, I guess.
Yeah, every now and then I have done something with lyrics, I'll play a blues tune to it. You know, 1-4-5. You know, 16-bar blues. How does that sound? No, you know, or it may, and then you know, or I'll finger pick it with the same chords, but just you know, just a completely different sound to it. And I just wondered if that had you tried different things in that way.
Yeah, I do. I've got tapes of songs that have different versions. The latest song that I wrote, called "A Change of Heart," which actually has gotten some radio play in Missouri. Don't ask me why, but they like it in Missouri. There's a college radio station out there that found it and they've been playing it. That was one that I just was strumming and shouting out nonsense lyrics. And somewhere along the way, I said, "Change of Heart." And then I went back to it on the tape and found it and said, "Well, I can make that a song. That's a song." And that one, I've probably got 15 versions of different, set to blues, set to, you know, rock, set to pop, set to folk.
Know? So now you got to decide which one's the best.
That's right.
But this song wasn't that way. I mean, you had a sense of the feel you wanted with this one.
I think so. I think I had played it live a couple of times before I recorded it, and so it kind of made itself in my mind, or imprinted itself on my mind, or something.
Yeah, so I'm curious about the structure of this. You've got the verse. You start right in. If I don't, there's not even an intro. You really just jump right in,
right?
Right. And then after that verse, you really got a full verse of instrumental before you start singing again.
It's an unusual.
And was there a thought behind that, just to give it space, or what did you?
I'd like to say there was a great deal of thought and and reason. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's almost a cappella. There is a guitar in the background at the beginning. And then I've edited, there's an edited version, I think, on the instrumental part doesn't go as long between the first verse and the second verse. But originally it was a whole instrumental verse. And then the harmonica comes in way at the end. And I don't know. My dog really likes this song, though, I got to tell you.
Oh, is that right?
He was in the studio when I recorded it. And if you listen really, really carefully at the end of the song, you can hear him start to sing. I faded away, you know. And ever since then, I just have to sing the first line of the song or the first chords, and he starts singing. It's the only song he does that with. I could sit here and play. I can go through my whole catalog and he'll just sleep at my feet. But if I hit that song, he's, it's amazing. Let's see if he's around here. The neighbors really,
that's great.
I've shown it to the neighbors before. And I have a friend who looks after my dog when I'm traveling, and he tries to do it. He sings the song and doesn't get any reaction. And then I just sing it and he,
that is so funny. All right. You got to listen to that. Because it is at the end of that first verse that your drums and the bass come in.
All
right. And so it does pick that up. And I always love a song that starts, you know, empty, you know, Spartan.
Right.
And then just starts adding all the layers and things. And then you played everything on here, I think, except maybe drums.
I don't play the guns, but yeah, I play everything else, the bass and keyboards and everything. Yeah.
As you put this together and layered it, were you doing much? You said you wrote it in the doctor's office, but yeah. Did you go through some rewrite after you started listening to it?
I honest to God, this one just was there, and I didn't change much. I can find you the notebook and show you the page, you know, and it's all there. It's the whole thing.
I'll believe you. You don't have to show me any proof.
I wish they all happened like that, but they don't. But that one did. You know, it was really amazing.
So I wanted to ask you've gone on a tour recently, and how did this get started, and what prompted this?
It's friends of friends of friends, and they're all getting married, and so I've become an international wedding singer. I played in Malaysia and Kuala Lumpur, and then we played Bali at a wedding, and then a wedding.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, 2 weeks, and last month I'm using the royal we, I guess, but we played at a wedding in Portugal outside Elizabeth. I thought about looking around, scouting around, and see what the scene was there musically, and see if, you know, there's a chance. But there, I don't see a lot of American music types playing there. They're into that Portuguese, you know, Spanish kind of sound everywhere. What do they call it?
Yeah, the Faro.
Yeah, Faro. Yeah,
yeah. Which is not terribly upbeat, exciting music.
No,
yeah, it's pretty sad. We're in Lisbon last October, and I did hear one guy on a plaza who was playing kind of like the Brazilian Portuguese samba, which I can listen to. I could listen to 24/7.
Yeah,
I just absolutely love that music. But you know, you're right. You think, I remember my brother once was in Europe, and he said, "Steve, if you were to come here and play your James Taylor," at the time, you know, I was playing all the Dan Fogelberg James Taylor. Right. If you were to come here on the street and play this, you'd make all kinds of money. People love this kind of music. And now I think it's just so pervasive that it's not as appealing as it used to be.
That's right. That's right. Well, my brother and I still can put it together. We haven't played in like 20 years, and we got together in Portugal, and all of a sudden we're doing Everly Brothers harmonies. It was like amazing. We just all of a sudden, I mentioned one song. It was a Beatles song called "The One After 909," and I said we could do that, and he said, "I don't remember that song." And I just started playing it, and it just came into his head. We're both perfect harmony. We're doing it.
you forget what you haven't forgotten.
That's right. It's amazing, though. It's I couldn't tell you how harmony works, but we just sing harmony. You know, just harmonize.
Were you playing the reception, or were you playing okay, not the service so much as the bride comes down. No. All right. So you're a wedding band.
They requested. In both places, they requested a Bob Dylan, what I call a Bob Dylan song, "Make Me Feel Your Love," "Made Me Feel My Love," which has been recorded by everybody else. But it's actually a Bob Dylan song. I think they think it's somebody else had a hit with it. But so I did that. I did that one, and I did a Springsteen song, "If I Should Fall Behind, Wait for Me." And bought a whole bunch of others, "Stand By Me," and a lot of, I didn't do many originals, but it was fun.
Yeah, the murder ballads don't go over that well.
We don't have the school shooting ones.
How'd you have friends in Bali? What did you say, Bali and Kuala Lumpur? You got friends all over the world?
It kind of takes on a life of its own. Like, you know, it's like, hey, would you ever think of coming to do the wedding? Well, sure. And then they go, hey, I have a friend who's getting married here. Would you do that? No, okay. So we had a great place. They put us up in Bali. It was wonderful.
Wow. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, you know, you never know. You just don't know where this line of work's going to take you, do you?
No, now I got an email from them. They want recordings of the songs I did. I said, oh, God, I'll have to get in the studio and record all the songs I got.
Good luck. Yeah. Do you even remember all the songs you did?
Yeah, that's right.
What's coming up for you?
I'm trying to get back in the studio and do more work. I don't have any gig. I don't have many gigs planned. I got really spoiled. I was for 2 years, the last 2 years, I was opening for this band in the Washington, D.C. area. They always, whenever they played, they'd call me and have me come down and open for them. And they played big gigs like the Hamilton and the Birchmere and places like that around there that, you know, that the big artists play. I only had to do 30 minutes and, you know, they had the green room and they had craft services and they had sound guys and roadies. Wow. And I got really spoiled.
What was the band?
They were a Bob Dylan tribute band.
Oh my gosh.
They only did Bob Dylan songs, but I opened for them and it was great fun and it was first class accommodations. So I'm really spoiled about going back.
Yeah,
to
between that and flights off to Bali. The spoil is maybe not the word for it.
Yeah, it's like, now I got to play Luke over here in Waltham. Or, you know,
you got to play some bar with some guy sitting at the bar with his back to you and, for tips at $100. Oh my gosh.
But I will. I bought some new equipment, like a looper and a drum machine, and I got to learn how to play them now and maybe work up a new act or something.
I can give you a lesson on the looper and the drum machine.
You can
if it's the one I know. There's so many of them out there now.
Right.
It's amazing how much sound one guy can put out now.
That's right. But
yeah,
I did play 2 or 3 weeks ago, and with those things, and somebody said to me afterwards, like, you're playing with pedals all the time. I said, yeah. I haven't got facile with it.
Yeah. It's part of the battle. It's just not screwing up. And the looper thing, if you get your timing off, the hardest thing. You can't play with a looper with a percussionist unless you absolutely nail it, or he's good at listening to, because you can be off by just the slightest amount.
Yes.
And he'll know it. But they're fun. You know, at least it gives you a little chance to, you know, play a little lead lick and have a little fun.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it just makes things a little bit more entertaining for you, if not for
the
audience.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of this is more entertaining for me, I think.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, Billy Claiborne, you are, you've got a website, Billy Claiborne, BILLYCLAIBORNE.com, right?
Yeah.
Just like Liz, what was it? Liz Claiborne, wasn't that the cosmetics line?
Yeah.
Spelled the same way, but no relation.
No relation.
That's right. All right. BillyClaiborne.com.
Steve, thank you for being such a booster for local music and music. It's been really great seeing you all the time and getting to know more artists because of you.
So. Oh, well, thank you, Billy. I appreciate that. Yeah. And I hope we run into each other sooner or later somewhere out there.
I see you playing this week. Maybe I'll stop by.
You know, I've always got, as I think I said on the promo, I've got a spare channel on the mixer and a spare microphone. So absolutely. All right, man.
All right,
thank you very much. Take care. Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.